beforehand. So people are on these platforms because the platforms do good things for them. People are on Facebook because it's where the people with the same rare disease as them meet, or it's where the people in the country they emigrated away from meet, or it's where their affinity group meets. And we don't want those things to be destroyed by a forced departure. We want to evacuate the platforms. And I think that in the European Union, there's this effort underway to create like portability. So if you leave Facebook or Twitter, you might be able to go to another platform. Maybe that's Blue Sky, maybe it's Mastodon, maybe it's something that hasn't been invented yet, and still stay in touch with the people you left behind. So you don't have to choose between the people you love and the platform you hate.
So we're going to talk about Blue Sky, Mastodon, and much more in part two. But right now we have to wrap up the show. Cory Doctorow is a science fiction author, activist, journalist. He works for the Electronic Frontier Foundation. His new book is, okay, well, we'll say, Embleepification, Why Everything Suddenly Got Worse and What to Do About It. That does it for our show. I'll be on the road on October 17th. I'll be in Santa Fe at the Santa Fe Film Festival, where the new film Steal the Story, Please is going to be playing, and I'll be doing the Q&A after. On October 18th, I'll be in Woodstock, 19th, Saugerties. I'm Amy Goodman. Check our website, democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon. A public service helping those who are feeling sad, struggling with alcohol or drug use, or just need someone to talk to. Trained counselors are able to listen and provide support 24/7. Confidential support available by text or phone call to 988. More info at 988oregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Kaiser healthcare workers could go on strike next week.
Portlanders plan an emergency naked bike ride to protest militarization and brutalization by ICE.
And in international news, the first phase of the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas begins, with Palestinians returning to Gaza.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 10, 2025. I'm John Nelson.
And I'm Sam Bowman. Healthcare workers at Kaiser Permanente in Oregon and Southwest Washington could strike next Tuesday if they can't reach an agreement with the hospital system. 4,000 Kaiser employees in Oregon are unionized with the Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals, or OFNHP. The union says 97% of their members voted yes to authorize a 5-day strike amid their ongoing negotiations. If they do strike, they'll be joining over 40,000 other unionized healthcare workers in multiple states who are also going on strike on Tuesday, the 14th. Sticking points in their negotiations include wage increases, patient load, outsourcing, and working conditions. These Kaiser workers last negotiated their contract in 2021, also on the verge of a strike. Gina Mann is a medical laboratory scientist at Kaiser Sunnyside. Mann told the Portland Mercury, quote, "When we bargained in 2021, it was basically right before inflation really went crazy. So what were modest across-the-board wage increases have actually pulled us very far behind our competitors," end quote. The OFNHP union has proposed a 12% wage increase in the first year of the contract, reaching a 25% increase overall in the four-year contract. Kaiser countered with a 21.5% overall increase. Workers are also concerned about Kaiser selling its laboratory business as other local hospital systems have. The two sides continued to bargain this week, with several days to avert a strike.
The Portland Emergency World Naked Bike Ride is scheduled for this Sunday. It will start at 2:30 at the Oregon Convention Center Plaza, organizers told the Portland Mercury. They'll be riding to protest the ICE building in South Portland and to press Portland City Council to revoke the facility's permit. The city has started the process to reconsider the ICE facility permit. An investigation showed ICE violated the terms of their building of their permit by holding detainees for more than 12 hours at least 25 times this year. ICE was notified in September and has 60 days to correct the behavior or otherwise respond. Typically, there's one naked bike ride per year in the summer, but the extraordinary circumstances in Portland prompted the organizers to plan an emergency protest ride. They write on social media, quote, "ORS 163 allows this form of protest. The vulnerability of bodies could not be more explicit than seeing our neighbors kidnapped off our streets, while at the same time those who protest at the ICE facility are dealing with being brutalized. This ride is clothing optional. It's your choice how much or how little to wear," end quote. The group Portland Contra Las Deportaciones will also be rallying Sunday starting at 2 at Elizabeth Carruthers Park.
Oregon Representative Janelle Bynum is calling for ICE to stop kidnapping her constituents. A Milwaukee man, Frank Miranda, was abducted by ICE agents last week and taken to the ICE facility in Portland for part of the day. Miranda was born in California, and he managed to film some of the interaction with ICE. The agents demanded to know if he was born in the United States, and Miranda refused to respond. The agents demanded that he turn around, saying, quote, "We're going to put you in cuffs or you're going to get the dog," end quote. Miranda was released hours later. Representative Bynum said in a statement, quote, "I'm infuriated about the abduction of one of my constituents, Frank Miranda. These ICE raids are reminiscent of the Fugitive Slave Act when the U.S. Marshals would hunt down and kidnap black Americans. That was a dark and shameful time in our nation's history. We must not allow that to repeat." She continued, quote, "I'm demanding an end to ICE's reign of terror, a thorough investigation into the kidnapping of Mr. Miranda, and fundamental change to this administration's approach to immigration," end quote.
Experts say immigrants are an important part of Oregon's economy, contributing 13% to the state's GDP. Though the Trump administration blames immigrants for taking jobs from U.S.-born workers, research shows that deportations lead to job loss and lower wages for all workers. Isabel Charlet reports.
As deportations escalate in Oregon and across the country, experts are highlighting the role immigrants play in powering the state's economy. Research shows immigrants make up 10% of the state's population and account for 13% of Oregon's GDP, about $33 billion. Alejandro Caral of the Oregon Center for Public Policy says immigrants are being blamed for taking jobs from U.S.-born workers, but history shows that mass deportations do not create more jobs.
The reality couldn't be farther from that. The fact of the matter is that every time there's been mass deportations, there is a decrease in available jobs, and there is also a decrease in wages.
Research from the Economic Policy Institute estimates that a national deportation of 4 million people, as proposed by the Trump administration, could eliminate 6 million jobs nationally, including nearly 50,000 in Oregon. There's an indirect economic impact as well, says Caral, because the threat of deportation makes workers afraid afraid to report unsafe working conditions as well as wage theft.
Workers could see a higher incidence of their hard-earned income being stolen by their employers because they know these employees are not going to report them to the authorities.
Keral says he's concerned that immigrants with legal documentation are also being targeted, which could stifle the country's innovation and technological progress.
The economic impact is going to be much greater than just on the agricultural or in the service field. It's really going to have a widespread effect.
Support for this reporting was provided by the philanthropic foundation Carnegie Corporation of New York. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Oregon State Representative Juan Nguyen died Thursday. The 41-year-old lawmaker represented House District 48, East Portland and Damascus. She was battling cancer at the time of her death. Nguyen served two terms in the Oregon legislature focusing on policies related to children, like expanding early childhood care and supporting students with disabilities. She was the eldest daughter of Vietnamese refugees and attended St. Mary's Academy and Portland State University. She worked at Robert Gray Middle School and served on the David Douglas School Board before her election to the State House. House Democratic leader Ben Bowman said in a statement, quote, "Representative Nguyen was a champion for her community and children across Oregon. She brought energy and passion to legislative work, and she was always kind and thoughtful." Representative Vanessa Hartman said Nguyen was, quote, "a powerful voice, a bridge builder, and a fierce advocate for families and survivors. She led with wisdom, grace, and an unwavering commitment to lifting others as she rose," end quote. Nguyen is the second state Democratic lawmaker to die this year while in office, after State Senator Aaron Woods died of cancer in April at the age of 75.
The ceasefire between Israel and Hamas took effect at noon local time today. Israeli troops have left Gaza, starting a 72-hour period for the remaining Israeli hostages to be released. Nearly 2,000 Palestinians held prisoner will be released through different phases of the agreement. Thousands of displaced Palestinians have been heading north toward Gaza City. It's been over 2 years since the genocide in Gaza began, and at least 67,000 Palestinians have been killed, and 90% of Gaza residents have been displaced. News of the ceasefire was welcomed. Here's how one Palestinian man in Masafer Yatta in the West Bank reacted.
"We as Palestinians, we are so happy. Not because we have a big victory. No, no, no. It's because we want this genocide to stop. It's stopping the genocide. So yes, we are so happy. We want this to happen, whatever it is, because our people have been suffering in Gaza since 2 years. They have no food. They have no place to stay, they have no hospitals, and they have no schools. So yes, we want this war to be ended. Yes, I would say that we are not so happy because not all the Palestinian prisoners have been released, like all the hostages, the Israeli hostages, but at least we want this war to stop."
The ceasefire agreement is the result of negotiations in Egypt between Hamas and Israel, mediated by Qatar, Turkey, and the U.S. It follows international protests for an end to the Gaza genocide and a number of European countries moving to officially recognize Palestine as a state.
In national news, the Trump administration plans to deploy the National Guard to Chicago. Those plans are on hold thanks to a court order. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. A federal judge is temporarily blocking the White House from deploying the National Guard to Chicago. President Donald Trump says he wants to send federalized troops to protect immigration agents and battle lawlessness. But the judge calls the evidence presented, quote, simply unreliable, and says there is no credible proof of widespread unrest or the threat of rebellion. New York Attorney General Letitia James, who successfully sued Trump for business fraud, has now been indicted on federal mortgage fraud charges. Prosecutors allege she misrepresented a Virginia property to secure better loan terms. The Israeli government has agreed to the initial stages of a Trump-brokered Gaza ceasefire. The next steps are still being hammered out, but humanitarian organizations say they will immediately prepare to bring in aid. Meeting with Prime Minister Mark Carney, Trump said Canadians will soon be traveling to the U.S. again. The two did not report progress on reducing high tariffs. The decline in tourism is hitting border economies, and New York Governor Kathy Hochul says crossings from Canada are down by a quarter.
It's had a ripple effect on how people have been behaving, not just companies and governments, but just individuals. The numbers are showing that our border crossings have declined since January of this year, February, in a way that is not sustainable.
Massachusetts health experts say without congressional action, Obamacare premiums could more than double next year, with rural areas and those with the most illness seeing the highest spikes. Angela Hanks with the Century Foundation says allowing important and extremely popular Affordable Care Act tax credits to expire will drive up costs for families nationwide.
We've put that as an average enrollee paying over $1,000 more next year for their health care if Congress takes no action this year.
In Minnesota, two new workplace discrimination settlements will require companies to reform hiring and compensate workers denied jobs based on gender. Rebecca Locero is with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights.
Our workplaces are stronger when we are working in places that are free from discrimination, where we can all show up as our best selves.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your local behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy and reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 51. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a daytime high of 59 degrees. Today in history, in 1917, American jazz pianist and composer Thelonious Monk was born. He had a unique improvisational style and is the second most recorded jazz composer after Duke Ellington. The quote of the day is from Chinese writer and translator Lin Yutang, born this day in 1895. He said, quote, "When small men begin to cast big shadows, it means that the sun is about to set."
Tribal leaders are expressing concern about the ongoing federal shutdown. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The federal government shutdown is in its second week. Tribal leaders across the country are continuing to raise concerns, saying Indian country will bear the burden. Matt Laszlo has more from Washington.
No one knows the full extent of how the shutdown will hit Indian country, but policymakers are braced for pain to come. Democrats continue to band together, demanding Congress intervene to keep Affordable Care Act premiums from doubling in the coming months. Arizona Democratic Senator Ruben Gallego says those future rate hikes promise more pain than today's temporary furloughs.
Well, it just depends. Like, some government workers obviously will feel it when they don't get their next paycheck because they already got their first paycheck. But when people are really going to feel it is around November 1st when they start getting open enrollment and 24 million of them are going to have their insurance rates double.
Take the Indian Health Service. While Medicare and Medicaid are first payers, IHS is a payer of last resort, which means the IHS budget is insulated for now, according to Oklahoma Republican Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, an enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation.
Right now, nobody's affected yet. They're dealing off reimbursements, and a lot of their reimbursements come off Medicaid and Medicare, and of course, that's not affected by this.
Even though Mullen isn't worried about IHS cuts, he says that doesn't mean Congress can shrug off the unseen impacts of a federal government shutdown.
There is no pressure taken off of us. We're in a shutdown. The thing is like, when are level heads going to prevail in the Democrat Party? That's what we're waiting on.
Indian country was already reeling from federal cuts before the shutdown. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. rescinded IHS staffing cuts earlier this year. But New Mexico Democratic Senator Ben Ray Lujan says cuts to other parts of the federal health care budget have been felt across Indian country.
There's a hospital in the state of New Mexico that an IHS facility that no longer offers support for moms delivering kids or having babies. And that's all because of the Trump administration and a direct result of the poor leadership coming from Robert Kennedy.
For National Native News, Matt Laszlo in Washington.
A new law clarifies the role of Washington State's tribes on local boards of health, granting each tribe a seat on their county's board, appointing their own representative. Isabel Charlet reports.
The change clarifies a 2020 state law that requires local boards of health to include members who are not elected officials, including tribal representatives. Vicki Lowe is with the American Indian Health Commission, a nonprofit that works with the state to promote wellness in Washington's Native communities. She says the previous language was not clear about who was responsible for appointing tribal representatives to health boards or how many seats were available.
I'm hoping going forward we can get more tribes on these local boards of health and the local relationship and working together to keep all of our community healthy and safe will happen.
Every county in the state has a local board of health that is tasked with enforcing health laws, controlling infectious diseases, and setting local policies. Of Washington's 29 federally recognized tribes, Lowe says so far about 15 have appointed someone to their local board. Ashley Bell is the tribal liaison for the Washington State Board of Health. She says the new law respects and affirms tribal sovereignty and makes sure that tribes are a part of public health conversations.
They are a part of the community and really have a direct impact on how community health happens.
The Washington Board of Health is in the first stages of the rulemaking process for the new law, which includes getting public feedback and consulting with the state's tribes and urban Indian health organizations. Bell says they are hoping to be done next July. I'm Isabel Charlet.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Congressional Democrats introduced the Voter Purge Protection Act to protect the rigging of upcoming elections. It's partly in response to a Department of Justice lawsuit against six states who did not turn over their voter rolls on request. KPFA's Kennedy Quayle has more on the story.
Democratic lawmakers from California and Ohio have introduced legislation to protect Americans' right to vote. Senator Alex Padilla of California and Congresswoman Joyce Beatty of Ohio unveiled the Voter Purge Protection Act in a virtual press conference Thursday. This comes after a lawsuit by the Department of Justice, or DOJ, against eight states, including California, for not handing over state voter information to the federal government. Padilla calls the legislation vital in the face of what he describes as efforts by the Trump administration to rig the midterm elections.
Regardless of party, when the president of the United States is trying to dictate who can vote in the next election and who cannot, that is beyond worrisome. And it's clear that it's part of Donald Trump's desperate ploy to hold on to power by rigging next year's elections and trying to predetermine the majorities in the House and the Senate. So we're trying to prevent these purges. We're trying to protect voters, and in so doing, protect our fundamental democracy in the United States of America.
Congresswoman Beatty says that purging voter rolls is happening nationwide, including her state of Ohio. She says nearly 160,000 people were removed from the voter's roll in the state, many of them because they didn't vote in the past election. She calls these purges discriminatory, saying that the majority of those that have been or are at risk of being purged are registered in majority-minority counties.
So let me be clear. Voting is not use it or lose the right. Because too often these so-called voter purges have silenced voices, people of color, people of low income, communities, and even our seniors who have waited and fought for the right to vote.
Minnesota's Secretary of State, Steve Simon, says that his office created and maintained the statewide voter registration system, with each voter record in the state being verified individually and checked against data from state and federal partners. Simon says that the federal government is attempting to take control of that system and systems across the country. He says that the information the DOJ is asking for includes not just name and address, but also social security number, voting history, and party registration. Simon says all this information will be used to purge voter rolls, affecting the constitutional right to vote.
Eligible voters, let me repeat that, eligible voters could very well be taken off the voter registration list without any notification. Now, in the 32 states and territories without same-day voter registration, this could look very much like a longtime voter who is fully eligible to vote, showing up in their polling place on election day and being turned away. And I'll call that what that is. It is un-American and it is undemocratic.
Padilla and Beatty urged colleagues to support the Voter Purge Protection Act and say it was vital to announce it despite the government shutdown. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Cuello.
A conservative voice is among those calling for climate unity. Benji Backer, founder of the Nature is Nonpartisan Coalition, says protecting the planet should transcend politics. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Climate change has become a charged partisan issue in the U.S., but conservative environmentalist Benji Backer hopes to change that.
If there's one issue that should be nonpartisan, it should be protecting the Earth, protecting our homes, protecting our communities, and making sure that we have a livable planet for future generations.
Backer is the founder of Nature is Nonpartisan. It's a coalition of people from across the political spectrum who care about climate change and are working to make bipartisan progress on the issue. He says opportunities exist, even in the midst of today's divisive politics. For example, Americans widely support protecting public lands, restoring forests to reduce the risk of wildfire, and increasing coastal communities' resilience to disasters. So through the Nature is Nonpartisan website, people can write to their representatives and urge them to take action on these issues. Backer says it can be challenging to work across the aisle.
Our staff is half liberal, half conservative. Same with our board. Everything we do is intentionally split across the political spectrum. It isn't easy. We're always straddling this balance of trying to represent people's priorities, knowing that we have the same end goal.
But he says finding common ground is critical in order to make lasting progress. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
The second week in October is International Plasma Awareness Week to celebrate people who donate plasma and encourage more to step up. Suzanne Potter has more on the story in California.
This is International Plasma Awareness Week, when patients and providers celebrate the selfless act of plasma donation. It takes about an hour for a phlebotomist to extract the straw-colored liquid from your blood and return the rest to your body. Zuiho Taniguchi from Union City says he and his 9-year-old daughter have a blood disorder called von Willebrand's that disrupts clotting, so they depend on plasma infusions to stay healthy.
Given my personal experience with plasma therapy, it's very important for people to donate. It takes a lot of donated plasma to make these medications, so the more people donate, the better access there is.
People can find a nearby plasma donation center online at plasmaweek.org. Any healthy person can donate as long as you're over age 18 and weigh more than 110 pounds. Anita Brickman with the Plasma Protein Therapeutics Association says plasma has many benefits. It can boost a cancer patient's immune system or speed healing in a burn patient, to name just two.
Hundreds of thousands of people around the world have immune deficiencies, neurologic conditions, bleeding disorders, a host of rare and chronic conditions that are treated with plasma-derived medicine. And for some of these individuals, this is their only treatment option.
Jessica Jennings works at Octopharma Plasma, which operates donation centers nationwide, including 20 in California. She says giving plasma is similar to giving blood.
It's pretty similar, but with plasma donation, you can donate twice a week. That plasma is replenished pretty quickly within 24 to 48 hours, and then you also get compensated for your time.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
From a single grain of sand, we now go to Pearl Stark at KPOV Bend with the Point Puzzle. This week's wordplay puzzle involves federal agencies and the government shutdown.
It's time for the puzzle.
Take three federal agencies that are often referred to by three-letter acronyms.
rearrange those 9 letters to get ASH and a word that is appropriate for federal agencies right now. So again, start with 3 federal agencies that are often referred to by 3-letter acronyms. Rearrange those 9 letters to get ASH and a word that is appropriate for federal agencies right now. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select 1 winner from among any answers received by this Saturday. This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of October 6th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 10, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Jenka Soderberg. The producer is Altia Billings, and our engineer, Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Kennedy Quayle, Farah Siddiqui, Antonia Gonzalez, Suzanne Potter, Pearl Stark, and Dr. Anthony Elizowitz. The director of Evening News is Altia Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm John Nelson.
And I'm Sam Bowman.